By yourself, you go fast, and as a team, you go far. Cut things into pieces, make sure that, you know, they're sort of looked after, and then you can move along.
There is quite possibly 10 different forms of motivation in some shape or form, and some of it isn't motivation at all. It's just habitual. It's the alarm goes in the morning, I get up, I go swimming. I'm not using any motivation. It's part of habit.
Hello and welcome to the Track Record Podcast. Each episode, we're asking leading performers in sport and business, what does it take to win? And today we've got two very exciting guests to delve into the world of high performance and get an insight from it. We've got Alistair and Ben. First question straight in, what drives you? And when did you learn that that was the thing that drove you? And Alistair, I see you looking away. So you're going to go straight to you. What do you think drives you?
I have given this question a lot of thought and obviously been asked it many hundreds of times probably. And the best answer I've ever come up with is you can't have an answer for it. And I think ultimately the drive to do anything, you know, really, really well, and to do anything well, you need to put a hell of a lot of effort in consistently over a long period of time. You know, for me, that's the definition of doing something well. A lot of those things have to be uncomfortable. It doesn't mean they have to be not fun or particularly hard, but it's not all going to be plain sailing. And to do that, it has to be habitual. It has to be sometimes discipline. You know, sometimes you've got to use motivation, willpower, whatever, but mostly it just has to be a really fundamental part, I think, of who you are. And I think, you know, that's not to say that my ability to work hard could translate to, I don't know, working hard on being a superstar DJ or something. You know, that's just not me. I think one of the real skills and tricks of life is finding the things that motivate and inspire you and provide an outlet for that hard work and determination and love of progress. You know, ultimately, I know the reason why I still do sport is because I enjoy on an evening or at the end of my day thinking, you know, basically I've done everything today I can to make myself a better athlete and progress.
Mm. It's funny because I was about to give a fairly similar answer to that, but probably with a bit of a different angle. I think as far as I'm concerned, whether it's sports or business, basically what really drives me is kind of reaching that point of giving the best of yourself. Like, it's, you know, how can you push yourself so much, you know, that you actually give the best of yourself? And you know, sometimes I hear, you know, some athletes, you know, saying, oh, I want to beat these people. I want to, you know, be the best. And to me, it's, yes, of course, you're the best, but it's more the best of yourself than anything, I suppose. And then obviously if you apply that to a domain where you're talented, obviously that's the best version of yourself in a domain where you can excel makes you the best of the world, probably. And that's how you end up there, right? But it's that combination that, you know, every day in the morning is really, really sort of drives me. Like, you know, what can I do? What can I do more? Can I push myself further to give a better version of realize a better version of myself, you know? And that's really what drives me. And then I try to apply that to sort of topics that actually motivate me, obviously. And I agree with you, Al. I think it's, at the end of the day, if you try to give the best version of yourself to something you're not really passionate for, like, it's going to be hard to get there, right? So obviously you need to apply that to something you really like. And so finding that combination of, you know, passion and drive around applying this, you know, day-to-day routine to me is you know, what made who I am today, I think.
And how have you found it? Interested, Ben, in terms of your business experience, and I'm sure you, Alistair, in terms of, you know, sport and business. But I totally get that as a great answer when you're thinking about yourself as an individual. It's like, you know what you can push yourself through. You know what you're passionate about. How have you found applying it to groups of people, you know, running teams, running businesses, organizations, or like, what's the challenge there when it's not then about you as that kind of inverted commas individual athlete? It's actually about scaling that across a business. So Ben, I'll throw that to you first. Like, what have you learned about that or your challenge? And have you had to adapt to accommodate others?
Look, that's the, that's where it gets even more tricky in a way and fulfilling, you know, in another way, right? It's the both sides of the coin is that, you know, what drives you? Well, you know, it takes some time for people to get what drives them, right? But you probably end up in life at a moment where you know what drives you as a person. And then trying to drive a team is obviously, you know, multiply that per person and then the combination between people. So it creates that sort of matrix of like, wow, to get the team to actually execute on a vision and give the best of themselves as a team is really hard. And that's why, you know, you already struggle as a sports person. And I, you know, I realized that with rugby and, you know, but then when you go to the enterprise world, it's even harder, right? Because, you know, rugby, you probably do sports as a team of people who are roughly the same age, same gender, and the objective is fairly clear. Like it's win a title, it's win a championship, it's there, right? But as a company, then all of a sudden it's different genders, different backgrounds, different ages, and everyone has a different goal. Like, you know, the goal as a company is not always clear. Like the title, what's the title? That's why, you know, startups, you know, keep on talking about their North Star and what sort of really aligns the team behind them. So you have one North Star, which is that gold medal, and everyone is pushing towards that direction. And then you have all the different personal objectives as well of people who are thinking of their career, thinking of their family and this and that. And so aligning all of these different pieces is a real challenge, but that's what makes it fun as well. It's like, you know, when you can give, you know, the best version of your teams, it's even stronger.
Yeah. And Alistair, so often athletes are seen as kind of the solo figure because that's what you see on the TV or, you know, when you're following it. And but as we all know, there's a huge team behind you to support you to get there. Like, how have you found ways of being able to support and, you know, inspire, motivate, all that kind of stuff with your support network?
Yeah, I can't claim to be an expert at it, or maybe I've been any good at it, but I think mostly I always saw my job to do a few things. You know, the first thing was to be really clear, as Ben was saying, of what the goal was. You know, this is what I'm trying to achieve. This is how I'm going to do it. Really objective, which is something which of course is really hard to find anywhere, really, but sport, and especially individual sport, especially when you've got a very simple goal in 4 years, which is an Olympic Games. You know, that there is nothing more objective, I don't think, in the world, possibly than that. So that bit's easy. The second bit, I was always very clear about my decision-making process or how we'd come to a collective decision, that I could consult people. You know, it might be coaches on a bit of training, or medics on a medical decision, or, you know, scientists, but I would, you know, consult the people around me, go and find experts in that topic for their advice, but I would be the ultimate kind of arbitrator of the decision, make the decision and live and die on that decision, and be very kind of clear that that was the structure that I was trying to put in place. And yeah, it was always super open. I mean, I think I saw myself as developing a way of kind of doing things, a way of training, effectively invented a way of training for triathlon, and freely gave away tons of IP that other coaches, athletes that train with me gained from, which is now in lots of ways widely copied throughout the kind of triathlon world. And I think, you know, I hope that giving that and being completely actually very open to allowing people to come and train in that environment and see what we're doing, you know, that people were gaining from that and try to be very kind of inspirational and transactional like that. And lastly, never, ever, I had very, very, I guess, high expectations of myself, you know, in terms of the amount of work I was doing. And probably had high expectations of people around me, but they were never, never, ever asked anything of anyone else that I wouldn't do myself.
I think that sort of exemplarity is crucial as well when you're a good leader, because it goes back to your point around, you know, when you're in solo sports, I haven't done a lot of solo sports to be fair, but you're actually the sort of, you know, captain or team leader in a way, right? You're the one, you know, doing sort of the arbitrage, as you said, and it's very much like being a CEO or a top executive in a company, right? You're the ones calling the shots. And so you're like, okay, I can't expect, you know, anything from the team that I don't apply to myself on a daily basis. Otherwise, well, at least there's, you know, when you come from sports, I suppose that's how you do it, right? You lead by example, and you're like, hey, you know, guys, that's the way you do it. And, you know, the pressure or the expectations I may put on you, you know, I put on the same or even more on me. So, you know, everyone is in the same boat. And yes, I'm calling the shots, but, you know, it's for everyone to win. And as long as the goals and the objective is clear, then in theory, you know, people should align. I mean, it's sort of an up around kind of, you know, philosophy and usually works quite well. If you disalign, then it's a mess. You know, if people want to go left when others want to go right, then poof.
I kind of associate, Alistair, with you, rightly or wrongly, like suffering and pain. And I mean that in a nice way. But like watching you race, it just looks brutal, like towards the end particularly. Like what within that do you tell yourself now when it gets hard? Like what keeps you going in that, in the racing, but in the training? And I guess the reason they're asking is just being very familiar with the level of monotony required to be good at an Olympic level, and Ben at your level, in terms of being an entrepreneur, is like the suffering and pain is there in different forms. So just keen to hear from you, like what is it you tell yourself that keeps you going through that? And is that different now to it was 10 years ago?
The first part of that question is, yeah, what do you tell yourself when it's getting, you know, really tough, whether that's in training or racing? In truth, loads of different things. You know, you can go away and read the kind of pop psychology science around associative and dissociative approaches to pain and driving yourself. And, you know, people say, oh, it's that associative pain. And I always explain that from having a really young age and teaching myself on local group bike rides. It was like a long hill as you come back up to near where I live in Leeds, and just teaching myself to be like, right, nothing in this world is going to make me get any further away from that spot on the back of someone else's bike, and excluding every other thought from my mind and just complete focus on that one thing. But in truth, in times, you know, especially in long distance races, you can be completely dissociating and thinking, this is really painful. I'm going to think about what I'm having for dinner tonight, or the first thing I'm going to do when I cross the finish line. So I think, like many things, you know, the real key to these things is finding what works for you in the time to get yourself through what you need to do in that time frame. And I think the same is true about monotony of training, what drives you in training, which I think is the second part of that question. You know, if I use the example of a morning swimming session, if every morning the alarm went off and I was laid in bed thinking, oh, I can't face how painful that 18th rep is going to be this morning, you know, the last rep of the session when you train as hard as you can, there's no way I'd ever go training because you'd just be dreading it. You don't do that. You get up and you think, you know, what motivates me to get up and make a cup of tea? What motivates me to get in the car? Why am I driving to training? Get out of the car. Before you know it, you dive in the pool, and 10 steps down the line, you're on that 18th rep, pushing as hard as you can. And, you know, within that short time frame of, say, an hour, there is quite possibly 10 different forms of motivation in some shape or form. And some of it isn't motivational at all. It's just habitual. It's, you know, the alarm goes in the morning, I get up, I go swimming. I'm not using any motivation. It's part of habit. And so I saw that actually, if you like, use, you know, you've only got so much kind of willpower. And if you have to use willpower to go training three times a day, you know, you're not going to train many days in a row. You know, you're going to stay on the sofa or stay in bed. So it has to be habitual as much as you can. You have to be inspired by other things, whether that's like social aspects, seeing friends, or I don't know, getting up because you're going to make yourself a cup of tea and have a bit of toast, or, you know, whatever it might be, really small things. And only when it really comes to it, on the really tough bits, on the days you really don't want to go out in the rain, you kind of dip into that bucket of willpower and use your relatively limited kind of that limited psychological resource, I think.
And Alistair, it's very interesting, I think, you know, because there's a lot of people who in the entrepreneurship world talk about, you know, routines and all of that. And in a way, what you're describing is sort of that as well, like launching your day or launching your session, you know, with a sort of daily routine where you don't have to think too much, and that gets you straight into what you need to do. And then you can focus on, you know, actually pursuing your goal. Is that something you experienced as well personally? And is that sort of similar to what you were expressing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think routine is important for me for two reasons. The first one is because you're taking motivation out of the equation. You know, I'm getting up and going training. It's part of my routine as much as possible. And the second point is you're taking uncertainty out of the equation. And I think having to motivate yourself to do something when there's uncertainty is really tough. So, you know, by using routine in that manner, you're taking both of those, all the processes out to make it, you know, doing the right thing as easy as possible. And at the same time, leaving you kind of psychological capacity to do and think about other things.
I'm sure you see this all the time, and perhaps you've been through it as well, Ben, in terms of, you know, at one point in your life is very simple. It's about you and it's performing, and you just put your energy into the thing that you want to achieve, and you're able to achieve it. But then life gets a bit complicated with families and responsibilities and such like. How have you been able to do that? And how do you support entrepreneurs to kind of get through that transition between a very simple, ambitious life to a more complex and yet ambitious life?
Wow. Well, look, that goes beyond just, you know, entrepreneurship or sports. Like, it goes about, you know, managing your life as a growing adult into yourself extended, you know, with the family and people around you, right? And I think it comes down to approaching things, to me at least, in a very specific and organized way. Like, you know, there's a saying, which is, you know, how do you eat an elephant? Well, you cut it into pieces, right? So, and that's exactly the same thing. Like, if you look at a problem or your life, when your life becomes complicated and you try to solve it as a whole, it's usually pretty much impossible, right? So you cut it into pieces, and then once it's cut into pieces, you're like, okay, that piece, what's the interactions with the other ones, and how do I solve it? Or how do I make it, you know, something that gets out of my mind because it's sorted out and I don't have to think about it? And that's usually how I approach things, and I usually encourage people to do stuff. Like, it's, you know, cutting the elephant into pieces and be like, okay, you know, now I can eat it. And that's where the team, you know, the teamwork comes into play, because usually you probably need people for some of these pieces, and that's how you get the best of yourself. I mean, getting the best of yourself into a team sports or into a company is also making sure that you empower people on their pieces, and that ultimately as a group you can eat that elephant, right? So I suppose that at your beginning of your career, you do a lot of stuff on your own because you think you're a super man or super woman, and then one day you realize, hey, hold on a second, you know, there's an African, you know, saying, which is, you know, by yourself you go fast and as a team you go far. And I think that's very much, you know, what's life's about, right? So when things get complicated and you have more stuff around you, you know, cut things into pieces, make sure that, you know, they're sort of looked after by people who care and who share the same objectives as you, and then you can move along. And I think that's, you know, going back to relationship, that's also one part that sometimes founders neglect a little bit, or even sports people neglect a little bit. But, you know, if you make it clear with your partner that, you know, there's a goal and everyone, you know, shares that goal and everyone is going into the same direction, then it makes life usually a bit easier. And every great, you know, business person usually talk about their partner. They just, you know, they usually admit at some point that, you know, they have the career because they have an amazing partner alongside them, because, and they're sharing the same goal and everyone has their own role in that play. So to me, it's key in the way you look at stuff, and yes, I think, you know, and taking, yeah, to Alistair's point, I think taking uncertainty out of the way is very important. It's a bit like, you know, when you try a new sport, basically, you know how you learn the technicality of it, and at the beginning you're technically conscious. And then you learn, and there's a point in time where you become technically unconscious, right? It becomes part of yourself. It becomes part of your body and unconscious, you know, memory, that you do stuff that sort of, you know, create value, and you can take your sports to the next level. You know, I'm not thinking of how I do a backhand lever tennis, right? I'm just doing it, and now I can play the sports to the next level. I think, you know, there's repetition and the work you put in is very much that. And there's nothing but work that can actually solve this, really, right? And you can be talented as you want, you know, if you don't put the effort behind it. So to me, yeah, that's a combination of discipline, being clear with the people around you of the things you try to achieve. So what's the goal? You know, sharing responsibilities and then work fucking hard. That's what it is. I mean, you know, no one succeeds without working, really.
Alistair, I'm really interested in your and totally kind of resonate with your making things part of your identity. And in some ways that makes it much easier because it's who you are, therefore what you do. Have you ever kind of questioned, like, at what point you have to take triathlon out of your identity? Have you ever got to a point where you're like, how do I separate myself from that to do other things? And what does that mean for you? And have you thought about how you're going to do that? Because it becomes so strongly entrenched.
Yeah, I think that question is about compartmentalizing your life, really. I think, as Ben was saying in your question, kind of pertaining about how you kind of keep that discipline, as it were. Discipline is the wrong word, as life around you becomes more complicated. Yeah, it's a really good one. And it's funny, I was with some of the IOC stuff I was doing. There's a bunch of ex-athletes, you know, I think almost all Olympic medalists sat around a few weeks ago or at something, and we were chatting around dinner, and everyone agreed that when they were training at their hardest, it was actually the simplest and kind of most content time of their lives. And, you know, literally went across sports, the most diverse group of people, apart from all being successful sport people, but, you know, from countries all over the world, different sports, different backgrounds, and all kind of in some shape or form now transitioning, I guess, all transitioned away, ex-athletes. Yeah, the time where they were most content was when they were just solely focusing. So there is something about that kind of simplicity of life. Having a singular focus, I think, is really good for us as you know, humans. You've got so many hours in the day. Yeah, if I'm training for six of those and resting, you know, am I a triathlete for eight of those? And that leaves me the rest of the time to be something else. I've got a 100% pie of selfishness. I can afford to use, I don't know, like whatever that figure is, 80% on myself and my triathlon career and 20% on something else, I don't know, to go out for a couple of meals with my mates or whatever that might be, you know? And that figure, you see it change, you know? I see it change for athletes that I've grown up around, you know, people who would have been used 95%, the most selfish focused athlete on themselves and their career are now maybe 70%. And obviously they're a more balanced person and probably a less good athlete for it. But I think that's part of kind of transitioning through life as I see it. But yeah, to answer that question of, is it part of your identity? Yeah, it's not something I've ever particularly worried about. Yeah, I identify more, I think, as being someone who is an active person who enjoys being outside and enjoys doing sport for health reasons and to be outside and enjoy nature than actually being a professional athlete and probably always have done. So that's actually what I come back to doing, and someone who enjoys pushing themselves in whatever domain that might be.
Super interested to hear from each of you on the grit point, because we like fully believe, and certainly in my old role and head of sports science medicine, it was our job to kind of build in grit to athletes in some ways, like build their resilience capacity and toleration of stress and pressure. Do you believe like it's a trainable skill, you know, grit? Do you have it or you don't, or you can train it? And also super interested, because we often get asked in the business world, like, can you meet someone and see how resilient you think they might be or how much grit they have? If you were to be doing that, like, what would you be looking for as attributes in people that you think, oh, they've really got grit? Like, I would back them to kind of get through it.
Yeah. Is it trainable? Yeah, I'm sure it is. I think every characteristic in life, whether it's physiological or psychological, has the components of, we all have a natural affinity for it to a level, you know, a scale, and we all have a trained ability to it. And yeah, we're not all equal in capacity at either or both of those put together, but we can all reach a ceiling, which is the combination of those two. And I'm sure it's the same for grit to an extent. So yeah, definitely trainable. And I also imagine it's variable depending on what else you've got going on in your life, you know, and the support around you. what would I look for other people? Probably, you know, the easy things to say kind of with resilience is dealing with setbacks, you know, the cliches of everyone get knocked down and it's how you get up, you know, insert many other quotes. For me, actually, it's about problem solving. You know, firstly, does this person have the will and the ability to solve problems that might come along? Because that's kind of what resilience is. You know, something happens, it's a problem in front of you to solve. I think probably whether that's sport or business. Do they have the skills to do that? Do they have the open kind of growth mindset to solve those problems and at least try and learn the skills or find the right people to help them solve those problems? I don't think you have to be like this in sport. And I think swimming is an example, which is probably the other end of the spectrum. But for me, in a lot of individual endurance sports, there has to be a big element of like self-responsibility. You know, does that person ultimately, are they going to take responsibility for their decisions, actions, outcomes? And you see that all the time in sport. You know, something went wrong with my coaching, or I got given the wrong advice by the physio, or that's always a warning flag to me. I know it's not like that in every sport, and in team sport, you have to subjugate decisions to other members of the team and get told what to do. My experience of early swimming clubs was obviously getting shouted at on the, and you know, if you had any self-responsibility, you got thrown out effectively. So the opposite, but I think my experience is that's wrong. And then finally, if someone is going to problem solve, they've got a high degree of efficacy of how they're going to do it, but a logical approach to that. And they decide and problem solve with a kind of a probabilistic framework. So I believe I can achieve this. You know, I've got a 60% chance of doing it, and this is how I'm going to go about it. You know, they're very kind of pragmatic in the approach.
We've been talking a lot about pushing ourselves and kind of, you know, being the best versions of ourselves. And so I'd love to ask you both, like, what would you love to be able to say about yourself, either what you've achieved, who you've become, what you are, in a year from now that you couldn't say right now? Ben, straight to you.
Well, it's going to be very biased, but I've just been a dad of twins. So, you know, from one year from now, you know, I want to see these kids, you know, at their best. You know, that'd be amazing as a person, as a father, and as a business leader. You know, I want to see the team reaching the goals we set for ourselves and being proud of it. Right. I think there's nothing better than a good third half, you know, when you had a great match and you're out and about to celebrate on this, which I think is very important as well in sports, you know, and in business as well, making sure that you celebrate your victories before you go back to war again, right? So I think to me that'd be crucial. And last but not least, obviously, given the job I do today, having found, you know, a handful of companies that are really changed the way we live, and, you know, giving the sort of challenges the world faces today, and especially from a climate and aging and society point of view, if we can really be instrumental in solving some of these key issues, they're not going to be solved in a year's time, but, you know, at least having some of the early answers to that, that would be phenomenal.
Alistair, what about you?
I had lots of like of my best performances in the kind of Olympic distance sphere of triathlon. I don't think I've had anywhere near my best performance in long distance. So just to have one of those.
Brilliant. Amazing. Well, just before we sign off, I'd love to be able to hear from each of you. Like, what, as a result of this conversation, have you either re-remembered, learned, kind of got further understanding about that without this conversation you wouldn't have had? So Alistair, for you first, what have you taken from the chat today?
Well, look, it was a very fruitful conversation. So there's a lot of takeaways for me, but the main one probably is focus. I think, you know, that's to me, realizing the best version of yourself, you know, can't happen if you're not focused. And as I was saying a bit earlier in my goal for next year, you know, I have three lives, you know, as of today. I mean, my person is, you know, very recently being a father, a sort of team leader, running a business and an investor. That's what I do. That's what defines me as of now. And so trying to be the best at all these three and finding the right balance between these three is very much my goal. And so that has to be focused. And that's why having just one North Star for each of these is important. So thank you, Alistair, for reminding me that, you know, I should have that on my wall every morning and in my routine when I brush my teeth. I go strong at it, right? I go hard at it.
Ben, what about you? What have you taken from our conversation today?
It's funny how life, the world works, isn't it? I seem to have been in a lot of conversations recently about the similarities of being an athlete and approach to being an athlete and early stage businesses, you know, just like randomly over the last month or so. And it is something that I've really enjoyed and seen the similarities and differences. So to hear more of those, and every time I seem to have one of these conversations, I learn something new. So to hear more of that from Ben, I've really enjoyed that. One thing I do like always, that one of the parallels to draw and undraw in this sphere though is, you know, you hear quite a lot in business, and it's something that I try and use in stuff that I work with, is move really fast and break things. I want to see people who do get stuff done. You know, you ask them a question, can this be done? Yes, it can. And even if it's not done completely right, you know, we've learned something on the way, we can go and do it again, rather than, oh, we can't do this because of X, Y, Z. Now, that's great, but that's one of the parallels that doesn't cross over to sport, because if you move fast and break something, you break yourself, and then it doesn't work very well. So yeah, I always like hearing from people who are much more experienced in business and drawing those parallels.
Yeah, nice. Catherine?
Yeah, I'd agree on the focus. And actually, the other thing was just the removing uncertainty and distraction. Mm. And it's just so interesting hearing that from both of you. It's just really helpful to hear that from both of you, and just came across very clearly.
Yeah. And same for me. I mean, the word that I've taken away is simplicity, and just kind of driving towards that. And the uncertainty, complexity and distraction are all things that aren't aiding that. And so therefore, you know, as Ben, you said, you know, take the elephant, chop into pieces and focus on each one at a time, or at least get a really good team that can do that on your behalf, then you're more likely to be able to get there. So thank you both so much for your time, your insight, your openness. Massively appreciate it. And look forward to you both achieving what you want to achieve over the next 12 months.